Hi, this is Jennifer Javornik, and you're listening to the Film and Games Podcast. This year, I attended the Games for Change Festival in New York City. Tune in to all the interviews in this series to hear insightful conversations with some of the best minds in educational gaming. Hey everyone, welcome to the Film and Games Podcast. I'm so excited to be here. This week I'm recording from Games for Change, the prominent conference in our industry, and I have a very exciting, high-profile guest today to talk with, and I'd love him to introduce himself.
It's great to be here. I'm Stan Pierre-Louis. I'm the president and CEO of the Entertainment Software Association. We serve as the voice and advocates for the U.S. video game industry, but I'm also a huge fan of Games for Change, and what you do.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's kind of my first question. I mean, you guys are a big deal. You collaborate with the biggest game studios in the country, and yet you always make time to come to Games for Change and to support what we do. How do you see games, like the serious games community, as a part of the bigger game community?
Well, when people think about games, they think about games, right? And in the public. And so what we want to ensure is that they're looking at the full scope of what games represent. We've got AAA studios as members, and we also have smaller members who make educational games. And by coming to Games for Change, we get to see the impact that games have in various communities, because that needs to be represented as part of our advocacy. And when I say advocacy, there's a formal tone to it that suggests it's solely about government officials. And that's a huge part of what we do. But we're also speaking to media, and we're speaking to the community. It's just as important to me that our people who are representing us in the halls of Congress have the information that anyone has going to a PTA meeting, because you are an advocate as someone who loves games. When you're in a meeting and someone says something that's incorrect, we want to ensure that you have the facts and figures that we have when we're talking about games, because all change is really local. And that's what we're essentially doing, is if you're talking to a member of Congress, they're thinking about their constituents. Well, by talking to the video game community about these facts and figures, it empowers every member of the community to have equal access to information and to debunk stereotypes, but also talk about the great things games do.
I agree. And on a personal level, you make my job so much easier because, you know, I'm usually the person who talks to organizations when they're interested in doing work with us. And a lot of my job is educating them, because the people that work with Filament are organizations that are nonprofits or educational publishers. Like, they come to us because they're like, oh, we see the kids are playing games. Maybe if we did something educational, like, we could capture their attention. So I just do a lot of education about the video game industry. And I doggedly look for when you publish the new one, and I update all my presentations with the new facts and figures. So I know you just published the new essential facts in the video game business. What was surprising about this year, or maybe not surprising, consistent?
Well, what we are excited about is that games continue to be America's favorite pastime. And we knew this coming into the pandemic, but the pandemic really shored up the not just interest, but engagement people have. And it's really blown it out of the water. So at a high level, we found that there are 212 million Americans who play games. And we're focused on U.S. There's obviously a broader picture. So if in the U.S. it's 65%, which is almost 2 in 3, globally it's 1 in 3, right? 3 billion gamers around the world, which is fantastic. We also found that there are just as many people 45 and older playing as there are under 18, which always throws people, right? And maybe even for folks in our community, they don't think of it that way, but the average age is 32 and the average playing years is 21, right? So 32 years old, been playing 21 years. You can do the math on that. And as we get older and we introduce games to our kids, that age is going to go up. And if you look at our study compared to like the AARP, which put out a study a couple of months ago on what they call silver gaming, the older populations, 50 plus, gaming at higher rates than ever. And they're also increasing intergenerational play, playing with their grandkids. And so we're seeing what I think others are seeing in their data, that games are reaching a broader set of audiences, hitting every demographic, and then connecting people. That was kind of the second biggest piece, which wasn't surprising, but illuminating, which is that 80% of people play with others either in person or online. That number was about 65% before the pandemic. It grew during the pandemic, and it sustained its growth post-pandemic. So more people are playing together, and more people are making good friends, meeting spouses or significant others through games. And we were at a talk earlier where Cynthia Williams of Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast talked about the number of people within the company who've met a spouse or a significant other through just their games, through Dungeons & Dragons or Magic the Gathering. And so you can get hyper-local in these communities, but there is really someone for everyone and there's a game for everyone. And we're excited about being able to share that story, quantify it, and then hear the stories at a Games for Change function or even through the work that you do that we can there share with a policymaker or someone else to broaden the scale and scope and understanding of games.
I know as you say that, I'm thinking, are you listening, Bumble and Hinge? Maybe you need to have a whole gaming part of your dating app strategy because clearly it's working for a lot of people. So I agree with that. So when I look at like what games are people playing, because I do feel like there's different games for different ages. So when you look at your study and you look at the broad age group, and we know one of the big findings is people are playing together, but what do you think are the games that, the types of games that people love to get in different demographics?
Yeah, at a super high level, we found that older populations tend to like puzzle games and also games that have been converted from tabletop games to virtual games, particularly during the pandemic.
Yep.
And so puzzle games and also the fact that games help us keep our minds sharp.
Yep.
I think that belief and proof makes older gamers really enjoy playing puzzle games. Kind of young and middle-aged gamers tend to like action games, sports games, role-playing games, first-person shooter games. And so I think there are different games that appeal to different age categories. But once people start playing together, I think you start seeing a lot of
secret sauce.
Yeah, and also because of the growth of mobile, and mobile is really the number one device for games, right? Because everyone
that
has
makes sense
a device
to me.
In their games. And you have a lot of puzzle games on mobile. That tends to skew towards mobile. And then as you get to console and PC and tablet, there you see a breakdown change a little bit. But when you look at the overall picture, puzzle games end up being a very, very big piece.
I have a theory on that. I think part of it is as you get into adulthood and have more responsibilities, you don't necessarily have 8 hours on a Sunday to join your guild and go do raids. Like you have pockets of time. And the nice thing about the mobile is it's always on you. And you have a few minutes while you're in line for pickup or a few minutes here that you can kind of pick up and enjoy in these interstitial moments.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think when you can get in and out and get that sense of completion, it feels good. And then when you have time for the longer piece, you can sit back and really go through an open world.
Right.
Which can be exciting.
Exactly. So yesterday I got to hear you speak at the special Games for Change SDG conference at the United Nations, how do you feel about talking at the United Nations?
Well, when we got our badges and got through, I was like, do they know what we do? Are you sure we can come into these elevators?
Yeah.
It was just so gratifying to see that games have elevated to the point where the leading global organization for world peace and addressing world crises believes that games can serve as a platform for good.
Right? I was like, what are their interests? Is this significant? And my big takeaway from the event is, oh, you guys talk to the young people. We want to talk to the young people, which is awesome.
Yeah, and we know how to talk to every audience, which is what makes games so special. That it's not just a game for everyone, but there's a community where you can enjoy the game in the way that you love it. And I think the UN sees that, whether it's the programs they have on the environment or even things like World Hunger that they're working on and trying to figure out how to use games for that. And just a touching talk about the game on the Sudanese refugees, right? And the ability to not only make a game that's powerful and tells a story, but can raise funds for an impacted community. I mean, just so moving. And when you see that, it makes sense that games should be a part of that conversation.
Well, I thought of it is that one of the things that struck me yesterday was just how we have examples of how games have united the world. We've had the Olympics since Greek and Roman times.
Yeah.
Like it's almost like this is something we can all agree on. We, as a global community, we love games. And It's just a commonality between like cultures and races and languages yeah. that like playing games is something that's so universal.
Yeah, Cynthia okay. Williams said something really funny about that when we talk about a third of the global population plays games. She says, well, everyone plays games, so it's really 9 billion.
And right.
That's such a great
I agree
line.
With that. Yeah. I agree with that because I think we, you know, the medium we use is digital games, but there's so much in common with, you know, tabletop games and then in real life games with sports, which is my next thing I want to talk to you about because I feel there's very, I want to talk to you about this because yesterday you mentioned like your relationship with your son and how he's gotten into competitive gaming and you've used games to play with them. Same thing. I think our kids are about the same age. I have teenagers. We've played games their whole lives in different ways together and apart. But probably you, same like me, I have friends, most of my adult friends are not in the video game community. So I have these moments where they take me aside and they're like, Jennifer, we support what you do. However, I am so sick and tired of my children like sneaking their devices and not sleeping at night and like not moving their bodies. I have a stock answer, but I'm interested in what your answer usually is.
Well, the first is something that someone shared on stage yesterday, which is, you know, you never hear anyone being scolded for spending too much time on a book, right? Or watching too much sports. And when you think about the fact that we are a sports world, but we are a sports spectator world, this is the sport of the youth. And when you put it in that paradigm, people start to think about the fact that what makes auto racing so incredible, whether it's NASCAR or Formula One, is that we can't do that, but we can imagine, right? And I've had the experience of actually getting behind the wheel of a car on one of these tracks, and the first thing I realized was I don't want to go 200 miles an hour. It seems great when you're going straight, and then you see the turn, and you go, that's a lot of work, and that there's some risk involved, right? Yeah. And so when you watch it, you become even more in awe, or any of the sports or something that you watch. That is the same thing happening with this community because they play the games and they're seeing it played at the highest level.
Oh, you're talking about esports in particular.
Esports in particular, but yeah, and that's what.
Or even taking in streams of players.
Yeah, and I think when parents begin to understand that this is the fascination of this generation, games, and the fact that we're not playing golf or basketball or any of these sports, soccer at the level that we're watching. It starts to connect. So that's one is I try to draw the comparison and understand. And it's hard at first because they're like, oh, it's different. I'm like, tell me why it's different.
Right.
And it's hard to debunk that.
Well, the one thing they say is, well, at least if they're playing sports, they're moving their body. And I was like, yeah, but a lot of people are just sitting and watching sports.
Yeah,
it's kind
they
of the
are.
Same.
And I think the other is all of the benefits of games. So we always talk about the fun and the joy of games, but there is a lot of emotional and social growth that happens, additional educational things that happen during gameplay, and the science is proving this out, and I love sharing with people the fact that not only is it providing mental relief and stress relief, but also mental acuity, you're learning about teamwork, you're learning about empathy, and what we're even seeing is you're learning about cultural awareness and sensitivity. Like as you play as a different character, you learn more, you see the world in a different way, and that's not only true in video games. I've done role-playing exercise with the team at work or others in various organizations where we try to put our shoes, our feet in someone else's shoes or whatever one does there, to understand the perspective that may be coming back at us. And when you take that on, you really do see the other perspective. And games do that in a very natural way. I also love the fact that games require you to fail. And failure is part of the process, grinding, right?
Yep.
And where else in life can you fail? And when you achieve, you feel really good about it. And others who went through that experience also appreciate the experience.
I also think it not only is the experience of failing, but experience, like, there's not like a period of mourning in a game where you, when you fail, right? It's just kind of like, well, you failed, get back in there.
Yeah.
And it's right. Like a really good, I think I do agree that over time it just sensitizes like, oh, well, do it again. What did I learn? What can I do differently? Like, how can I problem solve? Like, I think that is happening, whether you're playing an educational game or a commercial game.
That's exactly right. And that's the point of these games, whether it's memory as a tabletop game, I think Match was the game that got mentioned, or these high-end games where you're trying to get through these worlds and trying to even understand them. You know, it's always embarrassing for me when I'm playing a game and having trouble, and my son says, well, Dad, you're not even out of the tutorial. I'm like, oh, don't tell me that. I don't need to know.
I know, right? But we're here, and that's good. We're using our adult skills to, like, move the industry forward, so they should be thanking us. Well, I have a question, because from your perspective, you know, I sense that you see, like, the whole video game industry. So when you look at the segment of serious games, so I'm talking about, you know, games for health, games for education, games for higher ed, games for research. Like, I would love your perspective. Like, when you look at our industry, what are we not seeing or what are we missing? What do you think we can do to continue growing? Like, I've been in the industry 9 years. I've seen so much growth and more acceptance, but I still call our industry pretty nascent.
Well, I think part of it is us accepting our role. We have arrived and we have to accept that awesome mantle and responsibility. And I think understanding and owning it is a piece of it, right? There are a lot of industries that are not doing so well, but they still act big. And we're actually big and we sometimes stay in our corner. So I think part of it is being willing and able and excited about sharing the value that games produce. And then using them as examples, because they're all around us, but people don't necessarily put two and two together. So when I enter a conversation, let's say with a policymaker, I almost always start with something very humanizing about games. Like, does someone in your life play games? Oh, well, you know, the senator said two things, which was really funny. He's 65. First was, no one really plays games. I mean, my wife plays Candy Crush an hour before bed every night, but she doesn't really play games. I said, okay. And I said, well, he goes, I don't, but you know, I'm an old Air Force fighter pilot. And so I love getting on my Xbox and doing simulator just to cool down after a day.
Sure.
But I'm not a gamer. Okay. Right. Let's unpack that, right? And so that humanizes the experience. So it's not them, it's, oh, this, you know, it's 65% of people in the United States are playing games. Someone in your circle is playing games. It's family, staff, someone.
I even think that statistic's low.
It probably
because
is.
It's like, well, do you play golf? That's a game. You know,
yeah,
like
that's right.
I, you know, I guess in digital games. I
in
think the other
games,
thing is
yes.
People like I don't play games, like, but I do the Wordle every
yeah,
day.
That's yes, and
you
that's
know?
A humanizing moment when they realize, oh, I didn't realize I was part of that, and they don't think of themselves as part of a community, but then they have friends who play Wordle. And
yeah.
They compete about how many attempts did it take you to get there. So we try to do that. I think the other is to showcase some examples that people may not expect. So when you and I first met, we were at Games for Change under a stairwell at the New School, just chatting. We'd never talked before.
Yep.
And you were asking me what was exciting about games. And I started talking to you about iCivics.
Yep.
And then you dropped the bomb on me, which was developing games.
We made all those games.
Right? And I knew it from the policy perspective and how powerful a story it was and the work that's going on in Washington and how they're telling that story. And you knew it from the development side. And so I immediately felt this bond of like, here's this thing that I found so meaningful in advocacy. And I'm talking to the person who's actually, you know, creating the groundwork to make it happen. And I think the story of both that it occurs and it happens, and you guys are in the Midwest, right? You're not even in Silicon Valley or New York. Like, you're where games can be made, which is everywhere. Right?
Yeah.
So it's such a great representative of a power of games. So I think those small examples tell a bigger story about the power of games.
Well, on behalf of the entire serious games community, call us, because you probably know 1% of the stories that are happening, like the amazing thing that this serious games community is doing. And we want to be part of the broader conversation, because I feel like if the whole video game industry grows, our industry will grow. And we have examples of games we've made that I think is one very important segment of just the power of play. And, you know, and none of us think that there's not value in entertainment games, but I think like a lot of times people can understand using games for therapy or physical rehabilitation or to teach difficult concepts in a way that can help them then understand all the benefits of the entertainment side of our equation. So please call us all the time.
Consider yourself activated.
We have ideas. Well, that's so great. I really appreciate you talking to us today. I'd love to hear, just as we wrap up, like, what is your wish for this industry?
Well, first, I appreciate this conversation. I appreciate the work you do. I love the fact that you show up to Games for Change every year to to really proselytize all this great work because we need to hear it. It needs to be not only on this podcast, but everywhere. And so I'm excited about being your advocate. And what excites me is the opportunity games have to transform society. We talked about the UN, but we're also seeing it increasingly in schools and at a time when we need to democratize education. What better channel than where students are today?
Yep.
And where they're receptive to it and where there's opportunity for that growth. And games can do it on the local level and on the global level. And I think that's the power of games, the power of the opportunity that we have. And we ought to be excited about showcasing that to the world in the small communities and the large communities where we are.
I totally agree. One thing I say all the time is like when I went to school, like school was just acquiring information. It's like I went, sat in a class to listen to get my textbooks so I could access information, so I could listen to a teacher who could tell me about the information. I had to learn how to go to the library and go through a Dewey Decimal catalog and like find the book. Like finding information was a big part of school for me. Whereas my children, information is one Google away.
Yeah.
It's so school has changed. Like it's not, they don't need to spend all this time. They still need to know how to vet sources, but like finding the information. So then what is school? School to me is now about, well, let's take advantage that we are in a group setting, having having a joint experience that you couldn't have on your phone by yourself. So I do think like the power of games and simulations and XR experiences school is just, they haven't been like, it's the time in history where they are so relevant. So I'm also really encouraged about too, and like the potential.
I love it. We're so meta.
I know. We are the future. And I believe in the future, Stan. Well, thank you so much. It's great seeing you. Thank you so much for being on our podcast.
No, this has been wonderful. And thank you for the work you do.
Thanks for listening to the Filament Games podcast. If you like to hear more about games, game-based learning, and what's happening at our studio, subscribe today on iTunes or Stitcher. And be sure to visit us at our website, filamentgames.com.